It's the same site where the North last week conducted what analysts say was a rocket engine test.
North Korea conducts more apparent rocket testing. It's Monday, December 16th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, complicated recovery efforts in New Zealand. Unrest amid a new India immigration law. The president on trial. It's all on today's VOA Asia. North Korea says it has conducted another crucial test to bolster its reliable strategic nuclear deterrent. The test came just ahead of the country's self-imposed end-of-year deadline for the United States to provide more concessions in nuclear negotiations, as we hear from VOA's Bill Gallo from Seoul.
North Korea gave few details about its Saturday afternoon test, which occurred at a satellite launch facility. It's the same site where the North last week conducted what analysts say was a rocket engine test. North Korea appears to be preparing for a test of a long-range missile or satellite launch vehicle, both of which would likely use ballistic missile technology. The North has in the past conducted long-range missile tests under the guise of peaceful satellite launches, apparently believing that to be a way to keep military tensions from getting out of hand. The question is how such a move would impact nuclear talks. North Korea has given the U.S. until the end of the year to drop what it says is its hostile policy. Earlier this month, North Korea promised to give the U.S. a Christmas gift, saying it was up to the U.S. to choose which present it will get. U.S. President Donald Trump has ignored the North Korean deadline. He's also slowly ramped up rhetoric against the North, recently referring to North Korean leader Kim Jong-un as Rocket Man. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines that you'll find right now when you make a visit to voanews.com. A strong quake collapses buildings in Philippines. Police targets of both love and anger in Hong Kong rallies. China suspends planned tariffs scheduled for December 15th on some U.S. goods. You'll find these and much more on VOA Asia Facebook and also Twitter. Plus, you can stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Search teams have failed to find the bodies of the last victims of a volcanic eruption in New Zealand. The official number of dead from Monday's disaster now stands at 16. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Police and Navy divers have failed to find a body that was seen in the sea off New Zealand's White Island the day after the eruption. The authorities said they faced unique and challenging conditions. The water has been contaminated by the volcano, and divers had to wear special protective equipment. Another victim is thought to be near the crater. On Sunday, recovery teams again landed on the island, but neither of the missing two bodies have been found. It's unclear when another recovery attempt will be made. Six bodies were retrieved Friday by soldiers, who were flown in despite the risk of another eruption. The remains have been taken to Auckland for post-mortem examinations. New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern says retrieving the bodies of all of the victims is a priority.
We know that reunification won't ease that sense of loss or grief, because I don't think anything can. But we felt an enormous duty of care as New Zealanders to make sure that we brought their family members back.
Police have officially named the first victim of the volcanic eruption. Crystal Eve Browett, a 21-year-old Australian, was on holiday with her family. Identifying the other victims could take some time. Prime Minister Ardern said the country would observe a minute of silence at 2:11 p.m. Monday, exactly a week after what she described as an extraordinary tragedy. About 20 survivors with severe burns are in intensive care in New Zealand and Australia. Phil Mercer, Sydney, VOA News.
We're glad to have you with us on this brand new week of VOA Asia. Protests in New Delhi against a controversial citizenship bill turned violent Sunday when police entered a university campus and used tear gas against students demonstrating. At least two dozen students are currently being treated in a Delhi hospital. Student organizers blamed outsiders for the violence, saying in a statement they had only endorsed peaceful, nonviolent protests. Earlier in the day, three buses in New Delhi were set on fire. Police said six officers were injured in the melee. The Office of the United Nations top human rights official is urging India to scrap its new Citizenship Act, which it says discriminates against Muslims. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the headquarters of the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights.
Violent protests erupted in the Indian states of Assam and Tripura in the wake of last week's passage of India's new citizenship law, killing three people and injuring many others, including police officers. The UN Human Rights Office says it deplores the government's brutal crackdown on those protesting the enactment of the law, which it calls fundamentally discriminatory. The amended legislation grants citizenship rights to six religious minorities fleeing persecution in Afghanistan, Bangladesh, and Pakistan. But human rights spokesman Jeremy Lawrence says the law does not extend the same protection to Muslims.
The amended law would appear to undermine the commitment to equality before the law enshrined in India's constitution and India's obligations under the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights and the Convention for the Elimination of Racial Discrimination, to which India is a state party.
Lawrence says India's Citizenship Act could violate these international covenants which prohibit racial, ethnic, or religious discrimination.
Although India's broader naturalization laws remain in place, these amendments will have a discriminatory effect on people's access to nationality. All migrants, regardless of their migration status, are entitled to respect, protection, and fulfillment of their human rights.
A Muslim political party, along with lawyers and rights groups, have challenged the law in India's Supreme Court, arguing that it violates the country's secular constitution. The UN Human Rights Office says it hopes the justices will consider whether the law is compatible with India's international human rights obligations. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Nearly a year and a half after India scrapped a controversial legislation criminalizing homosexuality, the Indian capital has hosted its first ever LGBTQ literature festival. Turning the focus on stories and experiences of the community, the two-day meet explored common ground between different identities of society, as Anjana Pasricha reports from New Delhi.
The victory signs and celebrations when homosexuality was legalized in September last year came with the realization that creating safe and liberal spaces would not be easy. But 16 months later, many like Bhuvan Kathuria at this Rainbow Lit Festival hope queer literature and art will help.
Festivals like these bring us together and help us, say that, figure out the common ground and also talk about the challenges that lie ahead of us.
There is progress. The past year has witnessed a surge in creative expression of the community, whether in performing arts, films, or books. Much of it comes from a newfound sense of security provided by legal sanction for homosexuality.
There are people who have been writing it, but it was always from the point of view being repressed, being sidelined. Now it is just part of storytelling.
This US-based Afghan writer and activist has published his debut book in India about a gay Afghan man's struggle. India is a country where he feels safe.
This is a place where I can truly be my full self and not have to hide anything. I don't have to prove anything. I'm embraced here. I'm welcomed here. You know what? We're poised to create fiction where LGBTQIA people are in leading roles, and that's what you'll see more and more now.
Many hoped lighting this lamp signified that start. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News.
Coming up, an impending impeachment trial. You're listening to VOA Asia. This news from VOA Asia. A strong earthquake jolted the southern Philippines Sunday, collapsing a three-story building and prompting people to rush out of shopping malls, houses, and other buildings. The Philippine Institute of Volcanology and Seismology said the magnitude 6.9 quake struck in the Davao del Sur province. You can visit VOA Asia Facebook for this and much more. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, as early as this week, President Donald Trump could become only the third U.S. president to be impeached by the House of Representatives. If the democratically controlled House votes to impeach Trump for allegedly abusing his power related to his dealings with Ukraine, the case would then move to the Republican-controlled Senate for an impeachment trial early next year, where the political landscape is much more favorable to the president. From Washington, VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more on what a Senate trial would look like.
Senate would come to order.
In the Senate, a call for divine guidance from Chaplain Barry Black.
Lord, guide our senators to the right paths. Lead them beside still waters. Restore their souls.
The Senate has been down this road before. In 1999, President Bill Clinton was acquitted of perjury and obstruction of justice related to his affair with intern Monica Lewinsky. In 1868, President Andrew Johnson survived a Senate trial by a single vote after he was impeached for violating a congressional act protecting high government officials from removal.
There was absolutely nothing done wrong.
In the case of President Trump, House Democrats have accused him of abuse of power and obstruction of Congress by allegedly pressuring Ukraine to investigate a political rival, Democrat Joe Biden. Congressman Jerry Nadler chairs the House Judiciary Committee.
Our president holds the ultimate public trust. When he betrays that trust and puts himself before country, he endangers the Constitution. He endangers our democracy, and he endangers our national security.
Trump has denied the allegations and is counting on Senate Republicans to vote to acquit him in an impeachment trial.
The radical left Democrats and the failed Washington establishment are trying to erase your votes, nullify the election, and overthrow our democracy. Not going to happen. Don't worry about it. I wouldn't lose too much sleep over it.
Congressional Republicans have remained loyal to Trump, with only a few senators voicing criticism so far, says Julie Pace.
It doesn't mean that they will vote to convict him, but it does mean that we may see a scenario in which you have at least some members of Trump's party expressing real concern about his interactions with Ukraine.
To remove the president from office, two-thirds of the Senate, 67 out of the 100 senators, would have to vote to convict Trump on one or more articles of impeachment. That's very unlikely, says Larry Sabato.
I don't see how in the world you could ever get 20 Republican senators to vote to oust Donald Trump. They might as well vote to oust and then announce their resignations, because they won't be serving for very long once they cast that vote.
No matter the outcome, a Senate impeachment trial will be a demanding test for U.S. democracy, says Democrat Mark Warner.
And I would hope and pray that all of my Senate colleagues will take a deep breath, no matter kind of where we've been so far, and step back and realize this is probably the most important constitutional responsibility we have.
Even if Trump survives a Senate trial, his actions on Ukraine will likely be a top issue in the 2020 presidential campaign. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us online on iTunes and SoundCloud, YouTube, Instagram, VOA Asia Twitter, and of course on Facebook. Where? At VOA Asia. But you'll also find us on another Facebook page, VOA Burmese. And we say hello and thanks to everyone in Myanmar who's listened to our program today on Facebook, VOA Burmese. We invite you to come back again. We also like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Kelvin Fowler, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, including Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead.